Have you guys can see these gentlemen's faces?
Moderator, I would not want to think that in 2020 that we are adopting that practice. Mm-hmm. I would not want to think that. So I would take that as something that happened maybe 20 years ago.
I can let you take it that way and move on. Let's take another call. Good afternoon, Brass Tax Sunday. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Greetings to you and your panel.
Thank
and
you.
To all our listeners. Two questions in the form of two brief points. We are considered a wealthy country, and tourism is proclaimed to be our main income earner. It is perceived that the wealth that comes from tourism is not reaching down to certain sections of society. Could that be a contributing factor to crime? That is one. The second is this, prejudice. It is also a perception that prejudice is in this country, but it is not being highlighted. It is something brought out in where we go to school, neighborhood we come from, who we know. And it is not from a color perspective or point of view. It's mostly on black, as you have just saw, and it happened recently at one of our prestigious hotels on the West Coast, where a black guy was actually racially profiled. So when it's reaching the way the society and persons think that they are not getting a piece of the pie, could that be also a contributing factor to crime? That is my two questions, gentlemen.
Okay. I think what he's talking about is poverty and crime and profiling and crime, the disengagement in society and crime.
I would want to thank the caller for introducing the host, the tourist element into the conversation, because it's quite obvious that we have many publics. And apart from our plural society, we have a tourist population that comes with different expectations. Some from countries where policing is revered, and some from countries where the military might can be seen. So in our effort to understand that aspect of our public, then we have to pay special attention to its economic value, what's happening in the economy of the island. So therefore, not that there are any outlandish specialized tourist strategies. There are strategies that incorporate tourists and incorporate the locals. And as he clearly pointed out, and you summarized as different societies. Interesting enough, for this program, I decided to have a look at our community watch program. And I went through, and Mr. Cobbler provided me with some stats that suggested there was 143 community, what we call neighborhood watches. Whoa. And when I actually went to each of those neighborhood watch, I had about 95% of all those watches, either in a terrace, mm-hmm. heights, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. crescent, mm-hmm. Development, watches. But when I asked on the other side, tell me about my communities, the communities that I feel are neglected or challenged in our policing effort. Mm-hmm. And I see Gaza, I see Tel Aviv, mm-hmm. I see Daupon, I see this. I see a number of institutions that are called blocks. Mm-hmm. And
In our community program here a few weeks ago, I asked about that when we had the shop robbery. I was saying, where's the watch out there? But when we come back, I just want to read this one to show you what we're dealing with when we come back. This one says, what sort of baby questions these people are asking, man? I want you to ask the people, why they're driving wrong in ASC, looking on Kent with shoes not polished, taking 3 hours to come to accidents, frequenting clubs and engaging in activities, entering indoor places that are crowded with large guns and police abuse. Let's start the program. So when we come back, we got to talk to Mr. Price on this one. So, if that music tells us it's time for the latest from the Starcom Network News, more of Brass Tack Sunday when we come back, brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Williams Metals, choose us for your building needs at Williams Metals. We got what you need. We are the leaders in building materials. We offer lumber, cement, concrete, copper, aluminium, and all type of metals. For construction, get galvanized sheets, welding and plumbing products for sure. You can find that and so much more. Friendly staff to help with your search at King Garden, St. Thomas, and Lowlands Christ Church. Williams Metals, we got what you need.
Welcome back to this, the Sunday edition of Brass Tack, or as we call it, Brass Tack Sunday, where we're speaking to Deputy Commissioner of Police, Mr. Irwin Boyce, and Mr. Roland Cobbler, Inspector. We have a number of callers on the line, a number of messages on the WhatsApp, but before we left, we took one, and I put it to a smiling Deputy Commissioner now.
Moderator Glenn, when we started the discussion this morning, the first question, the very pointed question you asked me, why are we not utilizing the amendments to the Police Act in terms of locking down neighborhoods and stop and searches and et cetera, et cetera. And in response to that, I said to you, well, okay, we do things based on intelligence and on information, and we measured our response in a way that allow us to uphold law and order. And I am a bit taken back now that the caller or the WhatsApper had said that we are doing all these things. It seemed that, you know, on one hand, we want this type of action, and on the other hand, we don't want that type of action. So it's a bit confusing in terms of how do we answer. But what I can say is, as long as there's demand and there's a need for a action that needs force to be accentuated, it will be accentuated. Mm-hmm. As long as there's a need for conciliatory approach, there will be approach that will be conciliatory. Mm-hmm. So that is on the operational side of policing, the foundation for how we respond to matters and how we craft our responses.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed scanning through the WhatsApps during the break there while trying to listen to the news is the whole question of police accountability. And I want to talk about the Police Complaints Authority and the Office of Public Responsibility and its link to crime. On Wednesday, the receptionist can confirm this. There were a line of people waiting for me to bring their various documents or complaints and so on, anticipating this show. And I took the pictures of the documents for obvious reasons, because I need to see these things in order to speak for them. People sending all kind of messages here for me and saying, well, if you're a realist, read this and that. No, I need to see. Nobody is not bullying me into to think. But I'm going to speak to the ones you'll be familiar with a name. I just call the first name. There are many dogs named Bob. But there's a lady named Stephanie. She you may know her, Deputy Commissioner. She brought a whole folder of complaints. And I did tell her, anytime you have to go to the police so many times, either you have some serious neighbors, or you're in a real bad situation, or you may have to do some self-reflecting, okay? So I do agree that we do have people out there that would complain and they would have their own agenda. The point that I'm bringing is, a lot of people are saying that people take matters in their own hands when they believe that the systems do not respond in the way that they would want. At school, people complain to teachers and they believe that they don't get satisfaction. They go and they fight. in communities when people believe that people have wronged them and they either have no culture of going to the police or they believe it is a waste of time, they will take matters in their own hands. So I want to talk a bit about police accountability and when someone feels as though they have a situation with a police that they need redress, what would be your recommendation to them? And I really want you to speak to the difference between the police complaints authority and the office of public responsibility within the police. For the public can be reassured that there are mechanisms to hold policemen who may not do, or policewomen who may not do what they're supposed to do, to account.
Yeah, Moderator Corey, if I may start at the beginning, and you mentioned a name and you mentioned a series of complaints, and we are well aware of the process involved in those complaints. But sometimes, you know, sometimes you have a community that has about 30, 40 people, and you are finding one person who can have challenges with 10 of those persons in that community. And the challenges are not deep in criminality. Mm-hmm. They border in some instances on criminality. And although matters are then, you know, advice is given and approaches are recommended and matters are placed before the court, the instances with that individual keep popping up all the time. And you know, I know of the series of complaints, yes, and they are not like 2020, they are not 2019, they go back from 2000.
2004 to 2007.
Yeah, they go back from 2000, and you would see there are a number of other, there's no other complaint for other community members in relation to their own interaction in relation to their own comfort as a community.
All right, let us move away from that tree and back off a bit and look at the forest. And the forest is, when someone does, take that one out, that may be anomaly or outlier. If someone is aggrieved with the process of dealing with an officer, what is the recommendation?
No, the first thing we do is, if you are aggrieved with an officer or the conduct of an officer, and you believe it is misconduct, we recommend that you come to the Office of Professional Responsibility, or even go to a station and you report what you consider to be misconduct or ill treatment. Now, the officer there should take a statement from you or refer you to a senior person who would give certain instructions as to how the matter is to be dealt with. Now, once you have done that, the matter is then referred to the commissioner for investigation. And the commissioner will direct a senior person to do the investigation and within a particular period get back to him and let him know what is the position with the matter. Now, sometimes a misconduct can be translated as a issue that can be handled at what we call informal level, in that it might be a training gap. It might be a situation where there was a misrepresentation or misunderstanding of the interaction. And we call that management action. Management is then mandated to take action to correct that particular activity by bringing together the parties and either making sure that there's a clear understanding of where the officer stood and where the complainant stood in relation to coming to some understanding that we are going to correct that. Now, once the investigation has been completed and the commissioner identifies that there is an infraction, there is misconduct or even gross misconduct, he institutes what we a disciplinary proceeding. And that disciplinary proceeding reflects a trial at court. So the officer has equal rights to bring his witnesses, and the prosecutor, which represents the system, will also have the right to have those persons come before the tribunal. Now, unlike a criminal proceeding, the matter is determined on the balance of probabilities. That means that yes, you're not guilty until you're proven so, but at the same time, the facts, the way to get to that is quite different than if it is in a criminal jurisdiction. So once the commission, once that matter is heard and the matter is determined, then the commissioner can punish. He has a capacity to fine. He has the capacity to create within the sanctions, like recommending increments. All those sort of things are things that the commissioner can advance. Perhaps one of the fallouts in that process is that sometimes those matters are concluded without the knowledge of the complainant. For whatever reason, there might be a miscommunication or there might be a fall away from standards. But if the system is to be worked the way it ought to be delivered, then there would be that level of communication that allows the complainant to know, well, this officer was fined $200. This officer was transferred. This officer was sent on training. Those are the kind of issues that perhaps we need to sharpen our skills on. So the process is there. And if you go to the PCA, the Police Complaints Authority, they take the information and they pass it to the commissioner, and the commissioner directs the level of investigation.
My understanding, the difference with the Police Complaints Authority, different to the Office of Public Responsibility, is that with the Police Complaints Authority, you're supposed to have non-police investigating police. Is that correct? Instead of having the police investigate themselves.
I think they're moving in that direction. There are issues that they can call on that they consider to be of grave importance to the reputation of the force or to the complainant. And hence, they can call on the commissioner, who would normally do the investigation, to have the investigation reviewed.
I can't remember the year, but at the beginning of the Police Complaints Authority, I remember as a youth rep, I think Youth Parliament, Youth Council was asked to sit on that. That's how I knew it would have included non-officers. It was heavily engaged in a number of other activities, so I didn't take this one. A few I regret not taking up. But for my one part, I think that I like the answer you gave in terms of sharpening some of the processes. So, because the thing is, it's not only for justice to be done, but it seemed to be done. So it reassures the public. It makes sense that if I have a grievance, that I can go somewhere and get satisfaction. If I am indeed correct in that the officer on in that occasion may have been wrong. So I want to thank you for your response there. And I want to head back to the lines because I know how these programs, you know, tend to gallop away in relation to time, because we now heading on 10 minutes before 1. Good afternoon. Welcome. You're on the program. Good afternoon and welcome.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
Yes, I wanted to, I'm actually a retired police officer in the United Kingdom. I retired in March of this year. And I was really heartened to hear the deputy commissioner when he said that the strategy, I was the one who texted in to ask about the strategy, because I was heavily involved in Greater Manchester Police response to serious violence and organized crime. And our strategy was based around three pillars: enforcement, intelligence, and prevention. And I fought tooth and nail to raise the profile of prevention. And it was only when we actually raised the profile of prevention that we actually made major, significant advances in reducing serious and violent crime in our force area, which was a real problem. So I was heartened that to hear the deputy commissioner really pushing the prevention agenda, because I think that that's critically important if you're going to get a grip on crime in Barbados. And I think really allied to, you know, he talked about the need for up-to-date training in communication skills in particular. Now, how police officers communicate with ordinary people, ordinary Barbadians, on a daily basis, this cannot be underestimated in terms of the fight against crime. And so I believe that, you know, in that sense, you know, that's really heartening that you know, that we're on the right track. I think, though, that where we need to improve is around what you were just talking about then, accountability, transparency, and the ability for ordinary people, even in civil society, to scrutinize the work of the Barbados police force. And I think that's the area that needs to be worked on. But by and large, I think that, for me, I think the solutions are within the community. And the police, you know, we need to do a better job at empowering the community, working with community organizations that you know, that have the same goals. And when we empower them, then I think that we're on the road towards solving many of these problems.
Carl, I want to thank you. And if our news media, especially those relating to news, weren't so fascinated with titles and they used to carry clips from callers, yours would be one that I would want to hear for more people to hear in reporting. That was a good call. Brastat Sunday, good afternoon and welcome. Good afternoon. Let's go quickly because there are lots of calls. So let's get close to your telephones and speak to a commissioner and inspector. They're here to take your calls and questions. Brastats, good afternoon. Brastats, good afternoon and welcome. Hello.
Are you hearing me?
Loud and clear. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Corey, and good afternoon to the Deputy Commissioner.
Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My question is directed at the Deputy Commissioner. I'd like to know how the police force expects citizens, law-abiding citizens, to register a complaint or having been eyewitness to a crime, to give this information, sensitive information, to a police officer when that law-abiding citizen doesn't know who's who in the police force. There are bad and rotten apples in your police force. We know that. We don't know who to trust with information, and that information that we give out might cost us our lives. Do you understand where I'm coming from?